Welcome to the London Property Podcast, your go-to source for navigating the complex and ever-changing London real estate market. Our digital marketplace provides informative and educational content from industry leaders through podcasts and videos. We cover various aspects of the real estate experience, including buying and selling, finance, law, tax, construction, design, and more. Join us as we delve into the latest trends and developments in the market and gain valuable insights from our panel of experts.
Hello and welcome to London Property, the home of Super Prime. I'm your host, Farnaz Fazlipour, and today we're in conversation with George Seater, who is an expert in insurance. And welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Farnaz. Nice to be here.
George, can you just tell us a little bit about what makes you a specialist in this area before we dive into our specific questions that we have for you today?
Sure. I'm always reluctant to, you know, be held up as a specialist, but certainly by way of experience, I've been involved in the private client insurance business for 22 years, always as a broker, initially working for a very well-known firm, Stackhouse Poland, that built over 15 years into one of the largest private client brokers. I then ran the insurance business for Savills as part of SPF Private Clients. And I'm now 6 years into building my own business with Vision. So I'd like to think in that time I've gained enough experience to know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you certainly do. Well, you've helped some of our members very successfully, so we thank you for that. We're going to talk to you today in the first part of the series that we're doing with you about private client construction, and then there'll be a second part. Sure. To our discussion, which will be more about second home versus principal homes, which will be in the next episode that we do together. So let's start with when an owner needs to start thinking about insurance.
Yeah, now this is often an overlooked area, and you know, with any property transaction, particularly where it's a freehold purchase, it's important to consider when the risk passes to the purchaser. So traditionally, that's always been on exchange of contracts, but quite often buyers aren't aware of that unless it's flagged with them by their agent or their solicitor. So quite often, we see deals quite late in the day. You know, it's pretty common for me to get a call from a solicitor or a buying agent or an agent and essentially saying, we've got a client, they're due to exchange tomorrow. No one's sorted out insurance yet. Can you help? So we've become quite adept at being able to respond to those situations quite quickly. So traditionally on a freehold purchase, the risk would pass from exchange. The only time that doesn't tend to happen is if there's a delayed period between exchange and completion. If it's 6 months or more, it's more sensible for the buyer, for the seller to retain their insurance and then note the buyer's interest on their policy. But increasingly, even in those situations, sellers are a bit reluctant to mess around with their insurance policy and note the buyer's interest. So quite often, even where there's a delay, you'd find that the buyers will organise cover from exchange.
Yeah, it does catch a lot of people out that, you know, because you don't actually own the property.
But why would you insure something that
you don't own? And yes, I have been in those situations on Friday afternoon, like, yes, quick, we need an insurance policy. Yeah, no, I get that. And what is covered and what is not in that situation where you've got this limbo going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, not only have you got limbo, but often you've got overlapping cover because the seller isn't going to cancel their policy until completion's occurred, you know, for obvious reasons. But the buyer's then also insuring the same house. And actually, it's quite interesting because dual insurance is an area where the industry as a whole is—it's not something that happens. It's not something that insurers would advise. Yet it seems to happen every time that someone buys and sells a property. Quite often, because it's only 30 to 60 days, it's just accepted that's how the situation needs to be. But essentially, what you end up with in that scenario is the buyer buying something that we'd call contingent cover. Obviously, the chance of them actually calling on their policy in this period between exchange and completion is quite unlikely. If there were to be a claim, it's more likely that the seller's policy would respond. But equally, the buyer has to protect their position. And quite often, particularly if there's finance involved, it'll be a requirement of the lender that before they allow funds to be drawn down for completion, they've got to have evidence that insurance covers in place from exchange.
Okay. And, you know, in the super prime world, a lot of people like to put their own mark on a property, whether it needs the construction, reconstruction or anything or not. Mm. So presumably there is also that where you've got potentially an architect involved at an early stage.
Yeah.
So now you've got three parties to you know, at the table. So what happens in a situation like that where works are going to happen and presumably the architect needs to have some sort of insurance as well? So what's going on now?
Yeah, again, it's another interesting area. We said sort of before we started on camera that it's very rare that I see a deal now, particularly in the London market, you know, above sort of 2 million in value, where there isn't some element of works going on to the property before the client moves in. And I think it becomes more complicated the higher the value of works. Generally, insurance companies that are covering the buildings and contents element of a risk are quite comfortable if the level of the works are up to 150 to 200,000 in value. And by comfortable, I mean that in that sort of situation, they wouldn't look to impose additional terms. They'd be quite happy for their insurance to remain in place. They might want to do some checks in terms of the contractor to make sure that the contractor has suitable liability insurance in place, but it's an easier to manage risk. Where it gets far more complex is where the works are over, let's say, 500,000 in value, and particularly where something like a JCT contract is being used.
Which brings me on to my next question. So I've heard that word and I should know what it means, but what does JCT actually mean? And, you know, what are JCT contracts?
So it's the standard form of contract that's used
In building works.
Yeah, on residential homes.
Yeah.
And there are lots of different types of JCT contract, but in the main, they all cover the same things. And essentially what they do is provide a framework for everybody that's involved in the transaction, but in the process. So it provides a framework for the client. It also provides a framework for the contractor, and it provides a framework for the project team to follow in terms of architects and QSs and so on. That's in general what it does. From an insurance perspective, there's a particular section of the contract that identifies whose responsibility it is to insure and what they should be insuring. And typically for renovations of properties, there's only really one of the three options that's applicable, which is where the client takes responsibility for the insurance for the overall project. And by that, what I mean is that they'll insure both the building, but they'll also insure the works in something called a joint names basis with the contractor. So I can give you a bit more detail on that if you'd like to go into it.
Yes, please, because so basically you're getting into a situation of double insurance again, because the contractor is going to have insurance anyway for doing the works, but what you're saying is that the client has to do it too.
And actually what I'm saying is that the client's insurance would supersede the insurance that the contractor would have. So if you assume that in any renovation project, there's two main parts to the insurance. There's the who's insuring the house, the existing structure, as we refer to it, so how the building is pre any work starting, but then also who's insuring the works. And the reason that this option that I'm discussing, where it's the client's responsibility, is the best one, is because without it, there's no way of the client being able to organise insurance for the buildings. If you go back to my earlier point, most household insurance will cover works up to 200,000 without any problem. Once you get over that level, they will either not offer cover or only offer cover with particularly more stringent terms. And that's why this option of the client insuring both the building and the works together is the only real option to make sure that the client has proper protection. And I suppose as a final point on that, to give you a working example, if you assume that the rebuilding cost of the property pre-works is 2 million, but the client's going to do a further million of works, and those works are going to last for a 12-month period. If you assume that the house were to burn down the day before the works are due to finish, there'd be no point in the client being insured for $2 million, because they'd need to be insured for the $2 million plus the $1 million that they've spent. So that's what it protects, is it allows through the time period of construction that the works element will taper as we go, so that if any point there's a problem, there's sufficient cover in place to reinstate. And then the joint names bit, really, it just means that the client insures jointly with the contractor. So you'd write a policy in the name of Mr. and Mrs. Smith plus ABC Construction Limited for the period of the works. And what it also stops is there being any arguments between insurers. You know, if you had a situation where the client was insuring the building and the contractor's insuring the works, you've got two different insurance companies. So if there's a major claim, you're going to have two companies arguing over who pays for what.
But you're going to have two companies both trying to get out of it, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So the when the client does the joint insurance of both the works and the property, just so I understand this correctly, is there a limit to the works there?
No, not at all. So you're moving it away from the typical buildings and contents insurance policy. It then becomes a specialist renovation policy covering the building and the works. So there's no limit to the value of the works in the same way as there would be under a normal household insurance policy.
Right. But then the value of the works has to have the specialist as a joint with you, because obviously you're not a builder.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the involvement of the project team is particularly important. You know, we're constantly talking to architects, QSs, about joint names policies under a JCT contract. It's actually a very good source of business for us, because there's lots of really good architects and QSs in that sector who don't have anywhere to turn, don't have anywhere to recommend their clients to in that situation where they're advising on those more complex works. So it's always an area that we're looking for business as well.
Yeah, but that makes a lot of sense to get it all lined up together.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us about how someone would go about getting construction insurance?
So there's a few key components. We'd need a rebuilding cost, which thankfully most buyers will get as they go through the process of purchasing a property, or at least they should, from the surveyor that's carried out a survey on the property pre-completion. So we'd need that. We also need a schedule of works for what the client's planning to do to the property. Now, at quote stage, if we've got the rebuilding cost, we know who the contractor is, we've got an outline in terms of the value of the works, and we've got a likely duration. That's enough for us to put a quote together. But before that quote can be bound, insurers would need to see a detailed schedule of the works. And then what happens is, whereas traditionally you organise a household or a buildings insurance policy for a 12-month period, on these types of projects, you actually organise a policy for the duration of the works. So it stops being an annual policy, you know, and would literally just run and stay in place until the works are completed. And in terms of pricing, insurers will apply sort of the things that drive the price tend to be the duration of the works, the complexity, and the also who the contractor is. It's to be expected that insurers in this situation, before they sign off on a quote, will want to make sure that the contractor that the client wants to appoint are actually, you know, have the required experience for the works that they're doing, particularly with basements.
Yes, big topic there. And do the contractor's insurance not overlap a bit with the joint insurance that they're going to get with the client?
Well, the problem is for the contractor. So you know, a lot of contractors will have an annual contract works policy with a level of cover which allows them to provide a certain amount of cover per project. But the challenge is who insures the building in that situation. The contractor can't insure the building because they don't own it. Only the client can insure the building. And if the client can't obtain normal buildings insurance because of the level of the works, the only way for this to be done is to have one of these specialist private client construction policies in place.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. I'm going to take away some things you've taught me in this conversation. And just to wrap that up, a JCT, is it a prescribed type of contract that that comes from the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors?
No, it's just the standard form of contract used in these types of situations. We have on occasions seen a variation issued by REBA, but in the main, the JCT tends to be the standard bearer.
So it's a prescribed form. Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you very much for talking to us. I think that you're definitely going to help some of our listeners make decisions with the insight you've shared with us. And for any of our listeners who are members, they can head over to our experts directory and chat with you directly. Anybody else who wants to get in touch with you, obviously they can let us know and we can connect them. So thank you for talking to us.
Thanks very much, Farmers.
Thanks for tuning in to our latest episode of the London Property Podcast. Head over to our website where you can browse our exclusive network of top experts driving the market. As a member, you'll have direct access to our experts and their networks. Our award-winning content will help you choose the right professionals for your needs and make informed decisions about your investments. Personal recommendations are a powerful tool in connecting with trusted professionals. Let us introduce you to the right people to help you achieve your real estate goals. Contact us now to learn more about becoming a member and gaining access to these valuable resources, or joining our directory of experts.